Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
Ah, there you are. Thank you very much for downloading this week's Mick the Brit Podcast. A special one this week because all of it is dedicated to a conversation I had with Tony Walker, a fellow cab driver, and he appeared in the series 63 Up, which was aired two nights before on ITV. And Tony kindly came down to Russell Square to help raise funds for the London Taxi Drivers Charity for Children. And then afterwards, we had a conversation in the back of his cab. And yes, Tony was the one who wanted to go on to become a jockey, but he became a taxi driver instead. Enjoy. Just 2 days ago on national television, Tony Walker, now he's the chap who said he wanted to be a jockey at 7 years old, and now he's a cab driver. I'm now with Tony Walker. He's kindly come down to the London Taxi Charity fundraiser for the kids here at Russell Square. I'm now with Tony Walker. Tony, 2 days after being on the telly.
Fantastic. What a great day this afternoon is as well. Yeah, I mean, you know, see so many people here back in the kids' charity and lots of cabbies here, and it's nice being part of it.
Yeah, now, obviously, that programme is fresh in everyone's memories. Yeah. Did people come up and say,
it hasn't
today?
Stopped, Mick. I mean, you know, I've got paper and the press, they're phoning me up and asking me to do interviews, and really, I just want to like to say thank you to everyone who's sent kind messages through Twitter and Facebook. And obviously, I always try to get the black cab trade in because it's where my heart is.
Yeah, we see that. In the most recent, 63 Up, it was called.
Well, absolutely. But you must understand, there was more dialogue that went in, and it was adverse against Cameron and the Osborne situation, what we all know. Okay. But for the right to reply laws and the situation there, they cut a lot out because I was quite vociferous in my view on what they've done to our trade.
Yes.
And not forgetting what Boris did when it was suggested leave Uber alone. And
exactly.
It was all going on in my head. It was quite hard to be articulate, which I did to at the end to get the message across, to support the London black cabs, which is solely in my heart, yeah, as you know, being a 40-year-old driver.
40 years, 30 years for me.
Oh, 30, 40 yeah. years for me.
And now I was born a year that you first starred in that Granada TV documentary, and the idea was that they would feature kids' lives from different backgrounds every 7 years, and every 7 years they'd return, and it's like documenting kids growing up. And my mum, she vowed that when it was first shown, I was just born, so she vowed that she would watch it then. And just,
well, it's great to know I've got a fan in your dear mum, who I spoke to, as you know, after the performance in Charing
But that's
Cross.
How I knew about you, you see. Yeah, when you said you was a jockey and I put two and two together, I'd never seen it since then.
If you spread your wings further, there's a lovely lady in Hull, her name is Dorothy, and in 1964, when this was being aired, she saw me being interviewed then, and she was a nurse at the time in the local hospital, and she's gave her whole life to nursing, and she was just about to have a baby, and 9 months pregnant. She had the baby and she called it Tony after me.
Oh, wow.
Seeing me on the telly.
Fantastic.
But Tony then, her son, he ended up 35, 40 or whatever age he was, and he had a baby, a son, and he named that baby Tony. And
wow.
And it's also happened before with a young couple in Ireland who also named their baby after watching 7 Up. And it sort of follows me around everywhere I go.
Yeah, and the story that, I know I'm repeating myself here, but the story that you said, when you said you had, you picked up Buzz Aldrin, you know, tell us about that, because that was a...
Like many cab drivers, we've all had celebrities in the back of our cab, but, you know, and we find it, you know, awe-inspiring. And in this particular case, my nephew, John Boy, who was on the Knowledge at the time, he's at Grosvenor House Hotel, and I was showing him the ropes type of thing, you know, Park Street, when the doorman calls you up. And all of a sudden, I was on point, and the doorman whistled me up, and there I went, I'd gone up, and there he was, Buzz Aldrin, you know. I thought, blimey. And Obama was at the White House at the time. He's staying at Winfield House in Regent's Park, as any cab driver would know where that is. So he's got a guest appearance up there, Buzz Aldrin. So driving out of the forecourt of the Grosvenor Hotel, a cab pulls up, and he goes, "Here, mate, can you get his autograph?" Well, I thought it was Buzz Aldrin. So I turned to Buzz Aldrin. I said, Mr. Aldrin, can I have your autograph, please? There's a cab. No, no, no. He said, I don't want his autograph. I want your autograph. He said, my wife loves you. I thought, well, my God. So there I was competing with Buzz Aldrin, the second man to land on the moon. And I thought myself, I'm more tongue-in-cheek, more famous than him.
Yeah.
I had to
the
laugh.
The second man to last, and you're more famous than him.
Yeah, it was a belt, I really.
But he still followed you around, that fame, hasn't it, Tony?
Everywhere I go, Michael. I mean, I like a bet now and again.
Oh, yeah. Funny, Bill, being interviewed by another Michael.
Yeah, Michael Apted, yeah.
But I'm not asking you questions like this, Tony.
No, he's very articulate.
Yes, he was, yeah. Do you remember that? I mean, how did they first come round? I mean, I know I'm asking you to remember when you were seven. Yeah?
Don't remember you, very well.
But how did that come about? When did somebody just pitch up in the class? And
no, what happened was my dad was in and out of nick at the time. My mum was, you know, scrubbing floors. And the situation is she had to bring up four kids. I was the last of the four. And I used to have my hand-me-downs from my brother. Yeah. And I was hanging out my arse and everything like that. And they were coming to schools to try and find a group of kids from one end of the social spectrum to the other.
Yes.
And they went to the three young kids in Kensington in the prep school there, and they came to Bethnal Green looking for a parody, and they came to my classroom, and the teacher said, well, that's the guy, he's the one. He's cheeky, energetic, he's can't keep still. He's very noisy lad, and not only that, the deprivation was there, so you could see it.
Yeah.
Between the lines. So they picked me out. And seven after that, it was shown in 64. And I remember going to school with people saying, hey, I saw you on the telly last night, you know. And the Upsy was sort of born. And 7 years later, Michael Apted was in the canteen of Granada. And Dennis Foreman, who was the controller then, said, what's happening to them kids? And this was 1970. He said, I think you should go back there, Michael, and see how they're getting on. And he went back to us all, and that's when it was conceived, the programme.
Yeah, and to keep visiting every 7 years.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, it's probably not the right phrase, but a social history experiment, just of a way of documenting.
Yeah, but it came from a social, out of a little apple grew a big orchard.
Yes.
Because all the characters become characters.
Yes.
And the class system is still there in abundance, but all the kids on there, and now we're adults and we're sort of, you know, grown up.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a story to tell, and everyone in every social spectre can identify with someone upon that show. See, I'm glad I got the back in the London cabbies, the 24,000 of us, and they can identify with me, which I'm so proud to be part of an industry of sort of so lovely people, us cabs, you know, and we know. But it goes on from there, not just me, through other, like even the girls, and they've always got someone to identify with on the show.
Yes, and I think not just representing, shall we say, the London taxi trade, but likewise, working class people.
I'm so proud, Michael, to be a working class guy, and that's what it does show, you know, the passion of the working class on the TV. When you see it up there, the love of the parents, the love of the jobs, the passion of the jobs, all these type of things that are relevant and prevalent in them programmes. And as you see, I mean, the London cabs at this present time are getting a bad press with this Uber. And it's really killing the trade. And I had to highlight it.
Yes.
I had to highlight it. And there was more that meets the eye there, because the situation was, they have to have a right to reply.
Yes.
They did cut, as I emphasised before, that they cut a lot out.
Can you remember roughly how long this most recent episode, 63 up, shall we call it, which it is, if you go and look for it, it's still on the ITV Hub. It was only aired for the first time 2 days ago, well, Tuesday night, which is effectively as we're doing this 2 days ago. How long did the bits that you were, because you was featured right at the beginning there, weren't you?
Yeah, the last, it took 4 days to film.
Oh, okay.
They came in, they'll give you an idea what's going on. Tony, what's happened in the last 7 years? I'll give them a format. I've got a new grandson. I'm not in Spain anymore. We bought a new house and we moved from Woodford to High Beach. You know, all these things that they were very prevalent to to the show, which was a good input, tell the truth, and it showed you a true reflection what's happening to me at this present time. But I was really happy with the interview that I was done. It gave a true reflection.
Yeah, and the thing that I picked up on a couple of things, obviously the first thing was that he was suggesting, because he was a working class bloke kid, yeah, that you might have gone on to a bit of skullduggery and end up, you know, in Nick yourself.
Yeah.
And I thought, nah. And then you quite rightly said, well, it's either in you or it's...
Yeah, well, I remember so clear in 21 that I got my first ever car. It was a Singer Gazelle. And I was sort of like, you know, a bit of a jack of lad. Yeah, of course, yeah. And there wasn't a girl safe in Bethnal Green when I was that age, I've got to tell you. But seriously, he had me going down Valence Road. Now, I was showing in Bethnal Green, Pleach's Calf. And as we would go down Valence Road, obviously the twins were born, the Cray twins was down there where they, you know, was born and bred there.
Yeah, didn't you go to the same school as them?
Yeah, I went to Dayford School. We both went to the same school, but two generations apart.
Sure.
And, but, you know, they left a mark there, I can assure you. And he had me visiting all the sort of places of the Spielers, you know, the gambling houses, in 1976. And he perceived in his mind to think that I was going to be, you know, lose the tracks, stay on the right road type of thing. And I said, no, Michael, at that time, you can't judge a book by its cover. He said, but Tony, he said, because I never had a job there, Michael. I mean, my brother and my two brothers were London cabbies. Yeah. All my uncles, six uncles, all London cabbies. So I was on the knowledge at the time.
And
I was running bets down Ackney Wick Dog Track.
You was a runner.
Yeah, I was a runner, putting the bets on. It was a fantastic education for me.
Yeah.
Learning all about the prices and, you know, earning money, you know, on the knowledge. It was a lifeline, you know.
Yeah.
Never had a job, but I used to live on my wits. And so Michael Apted, he sort of put two and two together, you know, this boy's, you know, going to close to the line, which I was never like that, you know. I was never a thief, or I was never violent or in any way, shape or form. Always an happy-go-lucky type of guy, one-liner, joker in the pack. Yes. And he certainly got it wrong, and he did give me an opportunity to rewrite the books.
Yes, of course, because even though there was poverty, especially, shall we say, when our mum and dads grew up, and their mum and dads grew up. But it might have been poor, but they didn't go out thieving. They just made the best of what they had.
It must be said, my dad, when he was in the war, my dad sadly never done a day's work in his life. He was always playing the free card trick, crown and anchor. And he was telling me, he used to tell me stories that he used to go on the bomb sites when there was a bomb in the war, and little firm used to go and nick all the lead and any metal there and shoot. And then one day they had an ARP warden sort of got him.
Yeah.
And he sort of, in them days, you could get shot for it.
Wow.
And they were told in certain terms to go, otherwise we'll get you.
Wow.
And he did.
And he did. Eventually they caught up. Now, getting back to with this thing with the class, because the next chap that they featured, he started out 7 years old saying, I'll read the Times, I'm going to go to this.
Andrew,
yeah, because he was saying that he was going to, he's very much, and he spoke like posh.
Very eloquent, yes.
And lo and behold.
Well, as you can see, not just him on a personal level, I mean, in that class system of all them kids with the silver spoon in their mouth, their lives are mapped out even from the cradle.
Yes.
And I think it's the most boringest thing in the world, perceiving where you're going to be in 10 years, shall I or shan't I? Yes, I will be, knowing that you're going to be there.
Yeah.
Whether it's Charterhouse School, Trinity Church School, or whatever it is, and most of all, Oxford or Cambridge, to the end. But I wouldn't have wanted that. Don't get me wrong, education academically will always give you a better job, and the class system will always give you an easy ticket throughout life. But where would I be without my cab and my general public and my character?
That's right.
It's the best life I've ever had, and I couldn't ask for any more.
But that's the best get and the most genuine as well, I would say.
Well, people tell you that. It's hard to talk about yourself, because if you talk about yourself, you know, people point fingers and say you're conceited and big-headed. It's far from that. I'm just an excitable East End boy, Cockney with a quick wit and a one-liner, which I'm happy to have. And you know, I don't really change for anyone. No. If I won the lottery tomorrow, Mick, I'd still be the same Tony Walker. And
would you still be out in the cab?
I don't think so. I'd still be back in the cab. That's the difference. I'd be back in the trade.
Yeah.
I'd be beating the drum I've always endorsed, you know. I mean, I look at Tommy Parry and Lenny and all them boys. They've been on all the demonstrations. I've been on about 10 or 11, and I've always sort of supported them. But them boys at the helm, you got to take your hat off to them. You know, my only thing is about the politics of the cab trade.
Yeah.
You've got the you got Trevor's Union, you've got the LTDA and Steve McNamara, you've got Grant Davis with the LTDC. I only wish there was a happy medium between all of them, that they could come and amalgamate into one. Then we could have all the members everywhere of the 21,000 or 24,000 London cabs who are made to go into a union and to come onto the front line of the London cabs who are really fighting for their jobs.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing more worse and hurtful than being on a demo and seeing a London cab, a brethren or a London woman come, who's a driver, comes past you, right, in a black cab, who have got a job to Waterloo or wherever. It's soul destroying.
Mm.
And they look at you, they know, and they have to look away because they know the guilt that they're thinking, I should be there. They should be there.
Yes.
And I'm requesting, if this interview does go to the ears, on the deaf ears of people who've never been on a demo, not only would you come and make friends, but you'd come and support a trade who's been there for over 300 years and give your families a good living.
That's right.
So I would say, all you drivers, back it, get it, and stay with it. Because if you don't, tomorrow it might be us not having a job.
Yeah, indeed. When at 7 years old, they asked you what you wanted to be, and you said, I want to be a jockey.
Yeah.
And God bless you, that wish was realised, really.
Well,
You was focused on that, and that's what you went on to...
Well, I always had an affinity with an all 7 years old. I went to Dagenham, someone took me, and I went into a little yard, and there's a Shetland pony. And I'll tell you what, the pony was as big as me, and that was a Shetland pony. And I couldn't believe it. They got on, this horse, I'll never forget it, his name's Sherry. And I rode it, and straight away, the die was cast. I had an affinity with the horse immediately at such a young age. And it was after that the cameras come of me riding that little Shetland that I realised that the seed was planted in my head that I wanted to be a jockey. So when you hear me saying I want to be a jockey as a kid,
yeah,
it was probably a couple of months previous that I rode my first horse.
Wow. And then you went on to work at stable yards in Epsom?
Yeah, then at 13 and 14, I used to go 6 weeks holidays down to the stables from Bethnal Green to Epsom, where I had my wings clipped and quite regimental, which was fantastic, really.
Yeah.
And after I left school in 1970, I went immediately to Epsom with my governor and I signed apprenticeship forms to become a jockey. And as I've signed, within a month, I was riding racehorses on the Downs, and the governor called me in one day and he said, Tony, I'm going to take out a license for you. I think you're ready to go and have a race. So I said, thank you, governor. Yes, sir. No, sir. Free bags, full, sir, type of thing.
Yeah.
And you're getting me emotional now, Mick, because my mum and dad was alive then. When I told them on the phone that I'm riding at Kempton, and it was the proudest day of my life. Because my mum and dad are not here now, it's quite hard for me.
Yeah.
But when I walked out in the silks at Kempton Park, knowing that I gave them everything they could ever wish for their son, and not only that, my dream did come true, riding in the race of Leicester Piggott as a 17-year-old. And put it in perspective, if any kid had ambitions now being a footballer in the days of Pele, and your manager said, son, as a 17-year-old kid, you're playing Saturday in the football team, and your team now is playing against Brazil, and you're playing with Pele against him. How would you feel with your mum and dad looking at you?
Oh, fantastic.
It was overwhelming for me, and I carry that memory for the rest of my life.
Yes. Now, I think to be a jockey, like most people that are good at their jobs, they make it look easy, but to be a jockey, you've got to have a lot of bottle as well.
Well, there is a knack of riding horses. You must understand that what you do is you've got to have dedication, total concentration, and most of all, love the passion for the horse. You get on the horse, you have an identity, you both have an affinity with one another immediately as soon as you get on. you pull your straps up, you get your levels of sort of where you want to get your arse in the air, and your balance.
Yeah.
Once you get your balance, and you know, you click it, click the horse.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
The horse will respond, and away you go. It's as easy as riding a bike for me.
You ever come off?
Many, many times. I've had an horse rear up on me. I've had been kicked by an horse. I've had a horse whip round and throw me off. But it's like a trapeze artist. You're in a dangerous game. But once you fall, unless you're on a lower ground, I don't mean when you're high in the air.
Yeah.
But if you fall off a bike, you have to get straight back on.
And that's what you've done.
You're straight back on. You haven't got time to think about, I'm scared, or what happens if it hurts me leg or breaks me arm.
Yeah.
You don't think like that.
Yeah.
You automatically get thrown off and you get back on immediately.
Yeah. And I think watching jockeys and on the horses, you don't actually sit on the horse. You're actually... You said it, you got your ass up in the air.
You do sit on an horse, Michael. You certainly sit on an horse getting from the parade ring in.
Right.
And then what happens is you end up cantering down to the start.
Yeah.
And there's a form of sort of the race riding. The stirrups are right up and you put your knees against the saddle, grip.
Yeah.
And you keep your hands down, put your elbows in and just keep still and let the horse sort of glide.
Right.
It's like surfing on a surfboard. Well, I could say you just stand and you move your arms and it's balanced all the time. And while you're balancing, the horse understands every sort of the monitor exactly from the rider to the horse. It's a fantastic feeling.
Oh, wow. Do you ever think if I did stay in that, you know, being a jockey, what if? Or
there is a lot of what ifs. There was certainly a lot of what ifs, and it was a dream, you know, that I always wanted, but at a very early age, I knew I wasn't going to make the grade.
Right. How odd was that to accept?
I still haven't accepted it now.
Ah.
And every time I hear a bell go in a parade ring of a race meeting, ding, ding, I look and think, oh, I should be mounting up now.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like when you hear someone say taxi, you look straight away to the curb thing, you know, do they want me? Well, that bell is my punter for the cab. Every time I hear that bell, is I think I'm waiting to get mounted up on horse and take it down at the start.
Wow.
It was the best days of my life, without question. Without question.
Yeah, but you did it, brother. I mean, you know, even at that young age, you was... If you like, we do it in life anyway. People compare themselves. And looking at that, I'm 7 years younger than you.
Yeah.
And looking at you at 7'14", and I compare myself when I was 7'14". I'm still a kid compared with you, Tony, with no... not being disrespectful, no 7 years... But that's how life is, and I think as the next generation comes along...
Well, that's how I explained it to you before, going conducting this interview earlier, that everyone identifies with somebody on that programme.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, and most of all, you know, there's a lot of kids who have been born now, see it at 14, who have been 7 years ago, they're now 21.
Yeah.
And now the 21s are now 28s. And it's formulating a program of identity where every one of them generation of kids go in and see who they can sort of, that reminds me of whatever I've said is to inspire them.
Yeah.
Not only me, but the rest of the cast in that film. It's a great sociology program where I've been to many schools and institutes, and they do social studies about the program. And I've been often there, gone to talk about the situation, how it's affected them. Because when they write essays about the subjects, three or four of them in they write about me, and they send me tweets, and they send me emails, they send me Facebook messages, you know, all around the world, from Australia, America, South Africa, and you know, it's really, really a surprising thing to think I'm just a London cabbie, East End boy. No different from anybody else, you know, and I'm getting all this attention just because of social media and the television appearance, which probably any other guy could do the same thing what I'm doing. I think I'm a fair representation of an East End boy, and we're all the same.
Yes. At the Charing Cross Theatre where we first met, you did a turn there, Tony, as...
Max Miller.
How did you sort of get to know about Max Miller?
Right, I've been a Max Miller fan ever since I can remember, of his one-liners, his Cheeky Wit, Dooblong Tongs. And I contacted the Max Miller Appreciation Society in Brighton, where Roy Hadnair is a founder member and president of our society. And I went down there and I bought a suit, and they said, can I do a turn? So I went out and learned all the records and all the dialogue, and I got all the songs, which are all in my head.
Yes.
And it's like calling over. I learned the knowledge, but with a Max Miller act.
Yes.
And, as I say, I always try to pump the Max Miller Society. And once I picked Roy Hadd up, when we was having a Max Miller statue charity, and Norman Wisdom came down to unveil it, and Roy Hadd give me £12 for the cab fare from the broadcasting house to King's Cross Station, and I gave him the £12 back and said, put it in the Max fund for the charity.
Yeah, yeah.
And he never forgot that. And when I wanted some songs this year, Roy Hadd personally sent me the song.
Did he really?
Notes for the songs.
Yeah, because he's regarded as a son of Croydon, I think.
He's fantastic. Yeah. Him and his dear wife, Debbie, they've done so much for the arts, and they've done so much for musical.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be said, the people like him, they're a dying breed, and I'm so proud to be part of the Max Miller Appreciation Society.
Brilliant. And as well as being that, you've done a bit of acting.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about, that's featured in the TV program 63 Up, one of the last things that you, going into the Curzon Cinema there, Curzon Street. What's the story? I mean, that was a film called 90 Minutes.
90 Minutes, it's about football at Hackney Marshes.
Yes.
It's all about football, but it's all about the characters within the football.
Yes.
There's all stories that's happening amongst the game of football. Simon Baker, the up-and-coming director, I suggest you look out for a name like him. He's fantastic. I was already in a production of his called Night Bus. That was his first feature. I was in that, and he liked me so much, he put me in his other film called 90 Minutes, which you can download for 99p on Amazon.
Really? Oh, so it's already been out of the
cinema.
How long ago was that, Tony?
Well, we went through 3 months ago to the Genesis Theatre up in Mile End. Rio Ferdinand is the producer, and Simon Baker's the director, and we all had photos on the red carpet with Rio Ferdinand and the cast and the crew.
Brilliant.
Which was a fantastic day. All my family come, my kids come to see their, and my grandchildren.
Yeah.
And they saw their granddad and father respectively on the on the big screen.
And did the wife see the actor or the husband there?
Well, she always been calling me an actor for 40 odd years of marriage, so I think she found out what I'm really like.
Well, Tony, bless you, and it's great to finish this with you laughing here, mate. And
Thank you so much
you coming down.
And to all you London cabbies out there, male and female, guys and girls, keep working hard, and let's hope we can beat the mayor's directive, because we all know it's an injustice, and we only need support, and that'll get us over the line. God bless you all.